care for all, and new sources of energy to power our economy and protect our environment. Joe Biden and I will be working with Congress to bring about change in Washington. But we cannot do this without you. The change we've worked so hard for will not happen unless ordinary Americans get involved. And supporters like you must lead the way. You'll be receiving more information in the next few days about this organization and how you can continue to play a crucial role in our journey to change America. I look forward to continuing that journey with you. And I thank you for everything you've done for this movement and for our country.
Obama 2.0, Organizing for America, the Obama Mass Movement. There are links in there to the Washington Post and Reuters and even LaRouchePack.com. But the aforementioned DeepJournal.com, again, they have it posted up, an interview and the transcript with Webster Tarpley going back to May 16th, 2008, the men behind Obama. Especially in politics, it is of the utmost importance to try to look behind the facade. Who makes up the team of the presidential candidate? The future president of the United States of America is for a large part dependent on and being fed by his team of advisors and future cabinet members. Webster Tarpley wrote a book on the men and women behind Obama. He argues that there's more to Obama than his charismatic appearance and that some of his advisors pose a danger to the U.S. and the world in case and now Obama has become the president. Whether Tarpley's view is correct is a matter of opinion and remains to be seen, but for the public debate, it is relevant to take note of his facts and arguments. So there's an interview. It's about a half hour with Webster Tarpley. And that's what it's been all about as we look at all the ins and outs and the questions. I think I went over last week that the Obama citizenship question is the sort of controlled demolition of Obama truth. It gets all the attention, but it doesn't really get us anywhere, it seems, when all the eggs are put in that basket. When I think what I've tried to do on the show is just look at the advisors. Look at who he's with. Look at where they all come from. They come from a relatively small field. As we've covered many times before, we'll hit it again. Many, many, many of them all come from either the corrupt Chicago cesspool. You know, they're bringing those guys up. But it's the CFR, Bilderberg guys. It's the same. The Trilaterals, the Brzezinskis, the Volkers. The same folks who brought us the chaos of the late 70s and the black ops and the overthrows and the training and the funding. All those folks are back, if they ever really went away. So I think that's why I like always trying to follow Tarpley's work as he looks at their connections. So I think that's where it's at. Moving on through the flock has led to the slaughter. Again, these are all coming from the day before, so we set the stage. High in anticipation, celebrations begin as Obama's inauguration nears. This from McClatchy. Of course, Obama and his four-stop train tour that drew thousands along the way and paid homage to the arduous inaugural journey made by his political hero, Abraham Lincoln, 148 years ago. There's another one, Obama's inaugural train ride from the Swampland blog over on Time, another from McClatchy. Americans flock to D.C. to be part of Obama's inauguration, a very fitting title. Judy Wortham of Nashville, Tennessee, saw the fleece hat and had to have it. Shiny and bedazzled as it was, decorated in a sparkly copy of Shepard Fairey's iconic painting of President-elect Obama. Anything that goes like this, bling bling, she said, making blinking motions with her hands before she sat down to lunch at Old Ebbett Grill near the White House. Anything that's shiny. So, of course, I love the new president. Going overboard with Obama souvenirs. Another one from Time magazine, of course, Danger Room referenced all the kitschy items and souvenirs and garbage. Cashing in. Cash in now, honey. From the Washington Post, nation's hopes high for Obama. Poll shows even as they express deep concern about the current direction of the country, Americans are overwhelmingly optimistic about Obama and are pinning their hopes for recovery from a massive economic collapse on the president-elect, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll with a link for you to the full poll and all the questions and all the percentiles and all that. Nearly 8 in 10 of those surveyed say the country's headed seriously off course. 7 in 10 worry about their family's finances, and 94% say the country's economy is not so good or poor. The most negative assessment in more than 23 years of Washington Post ABC polling. Obama will take office as the most popular incoming president in a generation. He will also enter the White House with a broad mandate to act that was missing when George W. Bush was elected by the narrowest of margins in 2000. So at least fortunately the poll shows that people know that shit's not right. We'll always, of course, blame it on the last guy going out, as we get double-teamed by the false left-right one-party bullshit. So on the one hand, the people are in this poll at least, are awake to, we're on the wrong track. But they're pinning, let's go back, quote, pinning their hopes for recovery from a massive economic collapse on the president. Obama's train journey describes arc of U.S. history. That's from Deutsche Press. And lastly, on this flock being led to the slaughter, posting Obama's inauguration to generate over a half billion pounds of CO2. This from businessandmedia.org. Here's an environmental impact story you're not likely to see in the mainstream media. Neither NBC's chief environmental affairs correspondent Ann Thompson, nor ABC correspondent Bill Blakemore, nor CBS 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley, all of whom who have been eager over the years to expose so-called crimes against the environment, have rushed to report on the massive carbon footprint of the Obama inauguration. None of them rushed to mention it. But a comprehensive new study by the Institute for Liberty, and you can download that. It's a small little half-meg PDF. The Institute for Liberty took an in-depth look at each component of the January 20th inauguration in D.C. and estimated that 575 million pounds of carbon dioxide will be emitted into the atmosphere for the inauguration, which is roughly equal to what the average American household would produce in all about 58,000 years. Take that for what it's worth. I do not know who the Institute for Liberty is, but it's base irony. It's a hoot, as Bill Hicks would say. It's real simple, but it's a hoot. We're going to move now to the next one. One more day before posting on the Obama-Saya coronation. Such a big party for so little change. First from ABC, Obama's inauguration financed partially by bailed out Wall Street executives. The country's in the middle of the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, which isn't stopping rich donors and the government from spending $170 million or more on the inauguration. The actual swearing-in ceremony will cost $1.24 million, according to Carol Floorman, spokeswoman for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies. It's the security parties and countless porty potty rentals that really run up the bills. Links in there and more to ABC News. And another Wall Street becomes top Obama donor. That's from PressTV.ir out of Iran. Wall Street becomes top Obama donor. According to a study conducted by the Center for Responsive Politics, executives of finance, insurance, and real estate companies and their family members have donated $7.1 million to the inaugural committee. The center said the wealthiest Americans, from finance moguls to Hollywood stars, have given huge sums to the committee, hoping to gain more influence in the Obama administration. But from the New York Times, another one that shines a light on the false left-right game Obama reaches out for McCain's counsel. Not long after Senator John McCain returned last month from an official trip to Iraq and Pakistan, he received a phone call from Obama. As contenders for the presidency, the two had hammered each other for much of 2008 over their conflicting approaches to foreign policy, especially in Iraq. He'd lose a war. He'd stay 100 years. Now, however, Mr. Obama said he wanted Mr. McCain's advice. People in each camp briefed on the conversation said, what did he see on the trip? What did he learn? It was just one step in a post-election courtship that historians say has few modern parallels. Beginning with a private meeting in Obama's transition office in Chicago just 2 weeks after the vote. Monday night, January 19th, the night before, McCain was the guest of honor at a black tie dinner celebrating Obama's inauguration. There's a link in there to Yahoo, and if you dig somewhere through MediaMonarchy.com, you'll find all the other stories about how they were sharing some notes about what their cabinets were going to look like. Obama has 4 years to save the earth. That's from The Guardian. That's from an interview with Jim Hansen. Barack Obama has only 4 years to save the world. That's the stark assessment of NASA. There's NASA again, NASA and Obama. A connection we've been tracking now for seemingly 3 or 4 weeks. That's the stark assessment of NASA scientist and leading climate expert Jim Hansen, who last week warned only urgent action by the new president could halt the devastating climate change that now threatens the Earth. Crucially, the action will have to be taken within Obama's first administration. We must have a worldwide carbon tax. Paid to private banks. You do all those things. Play, pray, and pay. But where I stole the title of this posting, Such a Big Party for So Little Change, was from Chris Floyd of Empire Burlesque. Of course, one of the better writers and minds in this new 21st century online journalism world. Big party, small change. Baby, we were born to run the empire. Chris Floyd writes, I understand there's a big party going on in Washington this week where hundreds of thousands of people are gathering to celebrate Bob Gates' retention as Pentagon chief. I mean, that is what the shindig's all about, isn't it? Hope and continuity. We've got Bush's man still driving the war machine. We've got Bush's general still waging the war on terror all over the world. We got a president who's eager to spend his political capital on slashing entitlements because everyone must sacrifice. Everybody's going to have some skin in this game. Everyone, that is, except for the president's Wall Street backers, who are about to receive yet another tranche of billions of taxpayer dollars in what they're now calling openly and rightly opportunity funding. We got a president honoring homophobic right-wing preachers who urge their followers to imitate the mindless zeal of Nazis and Bolsheviks and doing, quote, whatever it takes to establish Christianist dominion. We got a president whose education chief believes in turning over the teaching of Americans' children to corporations and the military. We've even got a president who follows Cheney's good advice on interrogating terror war captives. It seems like the only place you can find change in Washington these days is in the cup of a street beggar left homeless and jobless in the great bankrupting of the nation by Wall Street and the war machine. Chris Floyd. Links in there to ABC News, Tom Dispatch, Godless Liberal Homo, .blogspot.com, TruthDig, Washington Post, on and on, celebrating the retention of Bob Gates, of course, involved with Brzezinski and Operation Cyclone and Iran-Contra and all of it. But you can always count on Hugo Chavez to stir shit up and say something outrageous and generally totally necessary and right on and needed. Chavez says Obama has stench of Bush. This is from Reuters. And you'll also recall, of course, that when Chavez and Bush were at the UN at around the same time. Of course, Chavez said, "I can still smell the sulfur from the devil being here." Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said last Saturday Obama had the stench of his predecessor as U.S. president and was at risk of being killed if he tries to change the American empire. Most world leaders expect a new era of U.S. foreign relations when Obama was sworn in. But Chavez said frayed ties with Washington were unlikely to improve despite the departure of Bush, who the Venezuelan leader has often called the devil. "I hope I'm wrong, but I believe Obama brings the same stench." SitePoint.com, Obama's web wasteland. This is kind of an interesting sidebar. So I keep getting tripped up on the tenses. So, as Obama was sworn in, of course, historic moment, blah-de-dee-blah, his campaign had a good deal of significance in the terms of how it utilized the Internet. The Internet will play a huge part in, of course, the inaugural festivities and then after that. But what has happened to the vast social networks that Obama built during the campaign? What will happen to them? The interesting thing, if you go to SitePoint.com and follow Obama's web wasteland as they track how all the Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and all the social networking things died. But as we just went over on the last posting, talking to Tarpley, Kurt Nimmo, and the Reuters report, Organizing for America, Obama's mass movement gets a new mission. They'll all be twittered into some sort of activity. High school censors inappropriate comments about the Obama Messiah. DaytonDailyNews.com. Superintendent warns against inappropriate comments. As we see the crackdown. New York City councilman proposes mandatory public service for students. This from the Epoch Times. Councilman Eric Goya, G-I-O-I-A, with a link to ericgoya.com, Democrat from Queens, and representatives from City Year, New York Cares, Common Cause New York, and Big Brothers Big Sisters gathered at the Church of St. Francis Xavier on Sunday, January 18th. Eric Goya proposed that New York City create a requirement of 20 hours of community service for high school graduation, inspired by President-elect Barack Obama's calling the nation to service in his inauguration and Mayor Michael Bloomberg's pledging to encourage public service at the State of the City address delivered last week. More talk. Now, of course, as all these things go, it always starts out good. It starts out for a good reason. And I'm not saying helping your community and service is a bad thing. Far from it. It starts with reasonable things, and it moves on to the snitch state, to the nanny state, to ratting on your neighbors, to the green brigades digging through your garbage. There's more, of course. There's so many links in these stories. It's all over the place. Washington goes into security clampdown for inauguration. That's from Raw Story and the AFP. But let's move to a few other disturbing things. So in the supposed mass movement, in the supposed grassroots uprising, grassroots uprisings don't generally, to my knowledge, have anything to do with Starbucks and Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore and pledges of service. Starbucks asks the fascistic musical question, "Are you in?" Come on, everybody. We can do it. Join the grassroots movement.
We have the tools and the skills and we're capable to change the world and make it more sustainable. Together we are strong and our bonds are unbreakable. If we act bold, we can attain the goal. Let's have the courage, we could be a service. Planting seeds when they flourish, everybody will be nourished. Together we are better, nothing to it but to do it. It's a grassroots movement.
Let's all do it together, every woman and man.
I pledge to bring awareness to mental disease,
to advance stem cell research,
to spread the awareness of autism.
I pledge
to show more love to strangers,
to meet my neighbors,
find out their names.
I'm going to give them a smile
and ask them how I can be of service to them.
I pledge to be a better mentor to my younger sisters,
to continue to be a mentor for big brothers and big sisters.
I pledge
to reduce my use of plastic
by starting with using less bottled water,
to plant 500 trees this year to help our planet
be more green,
to no longer use the plastic bags at the grocery store,
to consume less and cultivate more,
so that we are on this planet forever.
For the environment, I pledge to flush only after a deuce, never a single.
I pledge.
I pledge to turn the lights off, because I used to leave the lights on, but we want to conserve energy, so I'm turning the lights off, you turn the lights off.
I pledge
to sell my obnoxious car and buy a hybrid,
to drive slower and not use as much gas.
I pledge to volunteer my time
to express the importance of arts education in our schools,
to sell a culture of intelligence instead of ignorance.
I pledge to help children understand just because they come from a small place doesn't mean they can't dream big.
Am I such a cynical bastard that I find those things to be disgusting propaganda? So, celebrities on MySpace, myspace.com/presidential pledge. And before that, we heard the Starbucks ad, Are You In? It's a grassroots movement funded by multinational corporations, fool. Yeah, change. Paid for by Goldman Sachs. So Raw Story has this posted up under the headline. I had to double check this. Celebrities make service pledge videos to Obama on MySpace. On the eve of Barack Obama's inauguration, more than 50 celebrities have teamed up on MySpace to record videos making a pledge of service to the next president of the United States. I don't pledge to a dude, to some person. The disturbing cult of personality rears its ugly head. So on the flip side, however, again from Raw Story, 350,000 conservatives pledge to block Obama's socialistic agenda. A conservative group, grassfire.org, announced on Monday that its online petition pledging patriotic opposition to Obama has gathered 350,000 signatures. GrassFire's founder Steve Elliott stated, quote, "This is not a personal attack on Obama. On the contrary, this is a call to action for conservatives who profess love for our country and respect for our institutions. Our disagreements with the president are based in ideology and public policy only. From this firm foundation, we are mounting a patriotic, resilient, conservative resistance to Obama's agenda." More links in there to Yahoo as well as GrassFire.org. Excuse me. From Reuters, man charged with threatening Obama on his website. And to the Washington Times, we covered it last week, of course, the first ever Masonic inaugural ball. Masonic rituals live on in inauguration. President-elect Barack Obama's swearing in Tuesday incorporated several elements out of America's Masonic past. One-third of the signers of the Constitution, many of the Bill of Rights signers in America's first few presidents, except, of course, for Thomas Jefferson, were Freemasons, a fraternal organization that became public in early 18th century England. Although it became fabulously popular in America, at one time encompassing 10% of the population, Pope Clement XII condemned Freemasonry in 1738 as heretical. The latest pronouncement was issued in 1983 by then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, who called Masonic practices irreconcilable with Catholic doctrine. Still, As the first president, George Washington had to come up with appropriate rituals for the new country. He borrowed many of them from Masonic rites he knew as a quote-unquote worshipful leader of a lodge in Alexandria. His Masonic gavel is on display at the Capitol Visitor Center. Until this inauguration, Washington's Masonic Bible, on which he swore his obligations as a Freemason, was used for the presidential oath of office. President-elect Barack Obama will use Abraham Lincoln's Bible. Masonic rituals live on in the inauguration. Links in there for things about Abraham Lincoln's Bible and more about worshipful leaders, and more from FreemasonryWatch.org, the Catholics versus the Freemasons. Interestingly enough, fortunately, from 911blogger.com, new 9/11 brochure was made available at the inauguration, DC911Truth.org. DC911Truth produced an attractive new brochure to be distributed at the inauguration and surrounding events. On the cover, Obama's asked to, quote, help America learn the truth about 9/11. You can download the pamphlet. It's a little PDF. And the interior aimed at general audiences who may not be aware of problems with the official account or who may be quick to dismiss any questions as conspiracy theories. I have a JPEG photo of it posted up. The brochure looks good. That's, of course, sometimes the problem with any kind of controversial literature, whether it's on a website or on a flyer, that sometimes they can look like the ravings of someone who's raving. You know what I mean. Last few headlines, last few links on this Such a Big Party for So Little Change. Alex Jones has been doing new audio blogs that he just kind of records on a little digital recorder and posts up. So some of those links are there as the 19th and the 20th, the day before in the inauguration. But we'll get to more in just a second from him. But that link is there, audio link for you. However, there's a video that is more bizarre propaganda from Air Force One, Obama's first official USAF flight.
In what has become a tradition, the new pilot takes command of America's flagship as the new president takes command of the United States. Colonel Turner's first official flight as the new pilot? Pick up President-elect Obama in Chicago and fly him to Washington, D.C.
Good to see you. You're the pilot of Air Force One?
It'll be my pleasure to serve you, Mr. Pilot.
You know, I got to say, you're out of Central Kent. You're exactly what I want the pilot of Air Force One to look like.
Thank you,
look
sir.
Like you know how to fly. You look like Sam Shepard in the right stuff.
Thank you very much, sir. On behalf of everyone at Air Force One, I'd like to invite you, sir, welcome you aboard.
Thanks.
And introduce you to Reggie Dixon.
Welcome, sir. So nice to see you, sir.
My pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome
so
aboard.
How long
there is one thing he can be guaranteed. It's the fact that the presidential elite group will be prepared and ready at all times. No question.
We're going to serve you dinner tonight. I'm not sure if you had dinner already. This is a menu we have available for you.
I'll see how you guys do it first. Make it medium well.
By all means.
And cheddar cheese if you have cheddar cheese.
Sir, you know I got it.
Right.
Cheddar cheese?
Cheddar cheese.
We have it.
And I think you have some Dijon mustard. That's what I'm going to
say. Okay. Dijon or the Great Poupon?
That's mine. And
okay.
Then,
yes, sir.
All right. Now, and if you have, like, some salad or some vegetables or something.
Yes, sir. No fries or anything like that?
Well, I'll still take a fries.
Yes, sir. Well, I can show you, I don't know if you want to see the rest of the airplane at this point, sir.
Let's go. Let's go, 9-0.
Air Force One is Air Force One. It's not dependent on who is sitting in the chair. It is our responsibility to the office. And absolutely, of course, we will carry that forward with the same expertise and perfection we do today.
Like I said, strange propaganda. I believe that's produced by National Geographic. Nice little PR for the military and Air Force One. At least Obama does mention Sam Shepard and the right stuff in there. Of course, Sam Shepard playing West Virginian Chuck Yeager, first man to break the sound barrier. But I digress. Obama considering government-run bad bank for decaying assets. That's from Raw Story as well. Black History illuminates inauguration. That's from the Washington Times. Obama commemorates MLK Day with service. That's from the Washington Post. What was Barack Obama like in 1990? This is a strange and eerily prophetic article that's posted up on thestar.com. Hard to believe it was almost 19 years ago that the Star first ran this photo and feature on Barack Obama. Today, his ambitious goals and youthful views, not to mention the reactions to them, seem eerily prophetic. So, a 19-year-old article posted up for you. I'll just read just a bit from it. Barack Obama stares silently at a wall of fading black and white photographs in the muggy second floor offices of the Harvard Law Review. He lingers over one row of solemn faces, his predecessors of 40 years ago. All are men. All are dressed in dark colored suits and ties. All are white. It's a sobering moment for Obama, 28, who in February became the first black to be elected president in the 102-year history of the prestigious student-run law journal. And it goes on to paint the bizarre parallels. And I believe we'll ask the question in a little bit, is this, of course, the classic American tale of rising up, pulling yourself up, making it, or are there more things at play? Lastly, on this such a big party for so little change, a video, Obama comments, this was while it was another PR stunt on the National Service Day painting. And that's a good thing. Again, I don't want to be such a dick and say that doing good things for old people and painting schools is a bad thing. But at this photo op, Obama mentioned something that I haven't posted anything up on the site about, and I haven't made any mention of, but we should, and that's, of course, the plane that crashed in New York.
You sweep floors for a living, and make sure you're the best floor sweeper there has ever been. All right. And, you know, I spoke to Sully, the pilot who landed at USA Air flight in the Hudson, and he said, me and my crew, we were just doing our job. And it made you think, if everybody did their job, whatever that job was, as well as that pilot did his job, be a pretty good thing. So, you know, doing your job well, finishing your job, you know, cooperating as a team, all that stuff's important. I think I got this wall covered. Anybody see it? I think it's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, maybe this is a little dark because it's dry. All right, what else we got for?
We got some stuff downstairs.
Another strange bit of propaganda. That's Obama talking about the pilot who crashed, and if you caught it at the beginning of the clip, which of course it's edited and there's too much going on, he says even if you're a floor sweeper, be the best floor sweeper in the world. But he mentions the plane that crashed in the Hudson, which I haven't mentioned at all. It seemed to swirl around the exact time that Bush was giving his last speeches and his last press conferences, that the idea that a plane crashing in New York was keeping 9/11 and Bush ingrained in your head. But now we've made it to January 20th, the day of. So the first thing I posted up on that day, media execs prep for news emergency. This from Politico.com. Media executives must have been paying attention last week when President Bush declared a state of emergency for the inauguration. CNN's Washington Bureau Chief David Borman, for one, issued a news emergency of his own. It's the biggest event any of us have ever had to cover. It goes through all the points on how they basically operate in what is an occupied city, and how it's a huge circus, and how the media was going to be ready for anything to happen. And it has little funny things about slumber parties and sleeping in your office so you're already downtown for the thing. And I just thought the headline of media execs prep for news emergency was rather ominous. And I, of course, through all of this, have had sort of knot in my stomach about everything. Either real or imagined. I suppose I should tell you right now, we're well into hour number two of this 108th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's January 23rd, 2009. Coming to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, live every Friday morning, praradio.org, revereradio.net. And we're going over the coronation. Obama's high coronation. Yay! We're out of the frying pan! We've made it, finally, to the new commander-in-chief being sworn in.
Are you prepared to take the oath, Senator?
I am.
I, Barack Hussein Obama,
do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Whoops. Stepping into history, Barack Hussein Obama grasped the reins of power as America's first black president on Tuesday, saying the nation must choose hope over fear, unity of purpose over conflict and discord to overcome the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. In frigid temperatures, an exuberant crowd of more than a million packed the National Mall and parade route to celebrate Obama's inauguration in a high noon ceremony. They filled the National Mall, stretching from the inaugural platform at the U.S. Capitol to the Lincoln Memorial in the distance. With 11 million Americans out of work and trillions of dollars lost in the stock market's tumble, Obama emphasized that his biggest challenge is to repair the tattered economy left behind by outgoing President George W. Bush. It's all Bush's fault. More from Yahoo, more from the AP. Inauguration security tight after threats received. There were supposed threats, and then supposedly there weren't. And of course, it's never anything specific. One of the more interesting nuggets in all this, of course, it comes from Danger Room. As security enveloped the Capitol, Defense Secretary Robert Gates hides out in a continuity of government scheme as the designated successor. As the crowds descended on the National Mall to hear Obama take the oath, security in Washington was tighter than ever. 10,000 National Guard troops on duty, task force orchestrated by the Secret Service, uniformed police, plainclothes officers, representatives, dozens of government agencies. Perhaps the most important security precaution, however, is being taken by the Pentagon. As part of a continuity of government scheme, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates will go to an undisclosed location where he will ride out the inaugural festivities as Obama's designated successor in the event of some catastrophe. The White House announced the plan on Monday, the 19th, the day before the inauguration. Pentagon spokesman told the AFP that Gates, quote, will be spending the day at a military installation outside the National Capital Region. More from the LA Times on that, as well as defenselink.mil. But yes, the unelected head of the United States war machine was hiding out in a government bunker. Maybe it was in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. It was under the Clarion, or the Fish and Wildlife place there. But that wouldn't be outside the Washington zone, National Capital Region. Unelected head of the military is the designated successor. So if something happened and blew up D.C., Robert Gates was the designated successor. Think about that. Of course, linked up transcripts of the inaugural address, which I have to say, we have a, God forbid, television set that I can get a fuzzy ABC. So, of course, on the morning of the inauguration, I had it on. I also had streams going of other radios and all kinds of things. news overload like I do. It was a pretty dark speech and short and not very woohoo. It was, oh, fuck. From LouRockwell.com, inaugural inanity. 10,000 National Guardsmen, 7,500 active duty soldiers, 25,000 cops from 99 federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, a city honeycombed with communication command centers.